I'm Rick Ganley. This is NHPR News. It's 9:06.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. A national organization representing America's emergency room doctors this week released its 50-state report on the quality of care patients receive in the ER. And while New Hampshire did okay on some measures, when it came to psychiatric care, we ranked very poorly, leading to an overall grade you wouldn't want to show your parents, a D+. The reason will be no surprise to anyone involved in our mental health system. Too many Granite Staters in the midst of a psychiatric crisis, waiting way too long in the hospital emergency room because there's a chronic shortage of mental health treatment beds. But this year, the state, and especially our guest today, Health and Human Services Commissioner Nick Tumpas, are poised to make changes that could make a difference. The state settled a huge mental health lawsuit late last year, and as part of that settlement, more and better services will be required. Today in The Exchange, Commissioner Tumpas is here, and we'll talk about that, along with the many other items on his agenda for 2014, from managed Medicaid to medical marijuana. Let's hear from you, too. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Post a comment on our Facebook page, NHPR Exchange, all one word. And Commissioner Tumpas, welcome back. It's good to see you.
Good morning, Laura.
Before we look ahead to 2014 and the many, many, many items on your agenda, 2013, Commissioner Tumpas, seems to me it was a huge year for your department. Some challenges you expected, some surprises that you didn't expect. Give us just a summary, please, of what a big, big year 2013 was.
We had a significant year in 2013. We started the year with a number of different challenges before us, and I am very proud of the work on the part of the department and of the many partners we work with in terms of dealing with some of these challenges and turning them into opportunities for people. We stood up the Medicaid Care Management Program. We effectively resolved all the work that we had done the year before regarding hepatitis C. We solved a couple of pieces of litigation related to the hospitals and mental health. I know we're going to get into that in a bit. We stood up our systems in order to basically do the work with it related to the Affordable Care Act and allow people to basically sign up for our coverage. And we began work on the next phases of our care management program and looking at the long-term supports and services. So by any measure, we had a significant number of challenges, but really the focus of our people as well as the many partners that we work with really turned those challenges into opportunities. But again, when we turn the new year, we still have a number of other challenges on our plate, and I look forward to the new year to try to address those as well.
Well, and some of the challenges that you and I have talked about in the past have been fiscal challenges, Commissioner Tumpas. Now, about a year or so ago, the economy started to get better, and your department didn't seem to undergo such a set of deep cuts. What's the status of your budget now?
Well, There isn't a year that I've been in this role that I haven't started the year off with some shortfalls. But again, we've been working with the governor. We've been working with the legislature to say, here's what we're looking at. And these are the things that we're doing in order to try to address those. And we'll continue to do that. But again, there's nothing new in terms of that. So we'll just continue to work that.
Well, there was some talk at the very beginning of the year that the state ended the calendar year with a $15 million surplus. Some people said, hey, let's put it all back in the rainy day fund, which has been somewhat depleted or a lot depleted. But others said, hey, let's put a little bit into Health and Human Services since you guys sustained some back-of-the-budget cuts in the last budget. What are your thoughts on that, Commissioner Tumpas?
It's a policy decision on the part of the governor and the legislature. My responsibility, as I see it, is I'm given a budget. I need to manage to that budget. And if I have shortfalls, I need to go to the legislature and say, here's what I plan to do about it. And again, invariably, it goes back to the legislature. But I see it as my responsibility. This is what I've been given for a budget, and I need to manage to that.
How much did those back-of-the-budget cuts affect you?
There are two parts of the back-of-the-budget. One is the back-of-the-budget that was applied to the department, which was $7 million in general funds over the course of the biennium. And then there was an additional $4 million, which was our portion of the statewide back of the budget reductions that were mandated.
About $11 million total then.
Right. The other major component that we had contributing to the shortfall that we face this year is the last two payments of the disproportionate share hospital program from the settlement from a couple years ago.
All right. Well, maybe we'll get into some of that a little bit later. I did want to ask you about that D-plus grade that I mentioned in the opening that the state recently received from the American College of Emergency Physicians. And they especially pinpointed, Commissioner Tumbas, the long emergency room waits for psychiatric patients who don't need to be in the ER. They need, you know, mental health treatment. This is an ongoing issue. What's your response to that attention and not very good attention?
Well, I think it's important that there be a focus and a spotlight on a very pervasive and problem that faces both the state and the community. Again, when I look at the issue of mental health and its cousin, if you will, substance use disorder, is not a state issue, not a community. It's a state and a community issue. We have to work collaboratively in order to address this. So it really began in the current budget, where Governor Hassan and the legislature both supported a significant increase in mental health funding. So despite some of the challenges that we faced in the budget, an additional $24 million was allocated towards our 10-year plan. We recognized back in 2007 that we had an issue, and we put together a 10-year plan in order to address that we struggled sometimes in order to get the funding. Is clear, and that led to the degradation in terms of the number of beds and the capacity in the community. That being said, the recognition on the part of the governor and the legislature to say we need to make an investment in that particular area was very, very welcome. That coupled with the U.S. Department of Justice litigation that was recently settled between the state and the U.S. Department of Justice.
This
as well
is the
as
mental
the
health lawsuit.
This is the mental health
lawsuit.
It's made
lawsuit. Big headlines.
Yes. And in that area, there are a number of additional capabilities and measures that need to be put in place over the next 4.5 years in order to deal with that. You take combined the dollars that are stipulated in the Department of Justice litigation as well as our 10-year plan. It calls for an investment of over $90 million over the next 5 years. Now, the funding for the settlement has not yet been finalized and secured through the legislature, but the fact is that these are the areas that they've outlined, and I can go into those in a little bit in terms of the type of capacities that need to be rebuilt and strengthened within the communities.
So just back up again for folks who aren't quite up to speed on this. Basically, the quality of mental health services, and correct me if I'm wrong, degraded to the point where a lawsuit was filed and people said, hey, state of New Hampshire, you're just not doing enough for folks. And instead of letting the lawsuit go on and on and on, you guys settled last year. State Department of Health and Human Services settled last year and said, yes, we agree to do A, B, C, D.
The premise of the lawsuit was the fact that we were holding people in an institutional setting, whereas they could be dealt with in the community more effectively. And again, that was part of what we were trying to do with our 10-year plan, recognizing that they came in and pointed that out. We knew we had issues. I frankly believe that we were not warehousing people, but the fact that we needed additional capacity out in the community beds, crisis beds, assertive community treatment teams, these are all the different measures that are put in place. Absolutely, we needed to improve that.
At some level, are you glad that you were sued? Because this kind of lit a fire under everybody to you know, do what you wanted to do anyway in this 10-year plan.
The 10-year plan was that the dollars that we received in the legislature is something that we argued very forcefully, had the support of the governor and the legislature, bipartisan. So it was really gratifying that people, I think, saw that. Again, mental illness is something that knows no economic boundaries. It could affect anybody. And I dare say there isn't an individual that's listening that doesn't have a family member or friend that has been affected by this in some way. So the whatever could be done in order to basically bring a spotlight to that and say something needs to be done, I welcome that. I'm not necessarily the litigation part of it.
All right. Well, let me invite our listeners to join us. And then I've got another question for you on this mental health settlement. Our phone number here in the exchange for you to join us with Commissioner Nick Tumpas, he's head of New Hampshire's Department of Health and Human Services, is 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send an email to exchange at nhpr.org. Post a comment on our Facebook page, NHPR Exchange. That's all one word. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. You know, Commissioner Tumpas, people often point to the state when they look at the many shortfalls in our mental health system, and they point to your department especially and say, you know, New Hampshire and especially DHHS need to do more. But who else plays a role? What about private hospitals, private mental health providers like psychiatrists, private insurers? I mean, who's part of this community that you talk about?
I think the community is all of that. It's the hospitals. It is the community health centers. It is the community mental health centers. It is local law enforcement. It is the schools. It is the Department of Health and Human Services. There are a number of different actors and players, as well as a number of private providers and others that are out there. There's the insurers that need to be a part of the equation. But again, it is one of those things where we have to understand that if we don't address something early and do the early intervention and early treatment and look at the individual in a more holistic way, it's going to become far more expensive, and many of these people end up going into the wrong setting in order to get treatment. Bill Wren, if he were sitting here, who's the commissioner of the Department of Corrections for the state, would argue that a big part of his operation is dealing with mental health. If you had any one of the county jails that are sitting here, they will tell you that. Law enforcement, local, state, county, and so forth, they're all dealing with this. So what we need to do is we need to, as we look at both the 10-year plan as well as the settlement in terms of the elements of that, is really emphasizing community beds and emphasizing a continuum of care so that it doesn't just go to the most expensive and the most significant level of treatment, which is at the New Hampshire Hospital.
All right. More of our conversation with Commissioner Tumpas. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
This is New Hampshire Public Radio, 919. Good morning. As a public radio service, the opinions and insights of our listeners drives much of what we do at NHPR. You can make your voice heard when you become a member of our community advisory board. Find out more and fill out an application at nhpr.org. More with New Hampshire Health and Human Services Commissioner Nick Tumpas on The Exchange, then a 10 on The Diane Rehm Show, access to abortion 41 years after Roe v. Wade. New Hampshire weather becoming partly sunny today, cold with highs from single numbers to lower teens with wind chills below zero. Support for NHPR comes from you, our members, and support also comes to us from Dartmouth Hitchcock, primary care doctors and nurses who put you at the center of health. 13 locations statewide. Information at d-hdocs.org. And Good News Garage, a nonprofit car donation program of Lutheran Social Services, helping families become self-sufficient. Donate a car, change a life at goodnewsgarage.org. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, we're sitting down with Health and Human Services Commissioner Nicholas Tumpas. We invite you to join us, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send an email to exchange at nhpr.org. Post a comment on our Facebook page if you'd like, NHPR Exchange, all one word. Some of the topics that we're covering this hour include the new mental health lawsuit settlement that happened late last year. We're looking at what is going to be done as a part of that settlement. Later on, we'll also look at the move toward private providers beginning to oversee health care for low-income Granite Staters through Medicaid managed care. You can join us, 1-800-892-6477. Again, the email is exchange at nhpr.org. One more question for you, Commissioner Tumpas, please, on this mental health settlement. So we sort of looked at the big picture. This is the year it's going to start being put in place. Just outline us, if you could, please, the ABCs of this. What happens first as you work to meet the terms of this agreement?
Well, the first part of this, obviously, is to secure the funding from the legislature. But there are some things that we need to do right now. Over this biennium, the state fiscal year 14 and 15, which ends on June 30th of 2015, the settlement calls for the state to spend roughly $6 million in general funds, and the areas that we're focused on when you look at both what the 10-year plan that is in our budget and then the components of the DOJ, there are some commonalities there. There are assertive community treatment teams, which are a multidisciplinary team out in the communities. So we're expanding the capability there. We're adding additional beds out in the community. Again, that's one of the things that was pointed out in that that study that you referenced. We're looking at creating additional apartments, different type of apartments out in the community. This is where it's going to come to be a real community and state issue, because to place those, it's one thing to say we want to have those in the community. It's another to get through all the regulatory and other issues in the community to say I'm going to have that type of an apartment located in my community. There's one other item that I did want to reference on this is that with the issues that were raised by hospitals related to the number of people that were being backed up into the emergency room.
Causing huge stress for hospital workers and the person in the throes of the crisis.
And again, the incidents that happened down in Manchester.
The governor called
for a review, and there's three people that were tasked with doing that review. We expect sometime in the near future to be able to get the results of that, and hopefully that will shed a little bit of additional light. Because they talk with people in the community mental health center and the hospitals and areas within the community along the lines that we had talked about earlier.
Well, and we've talked, of course, appropriately about what your role is in putting this settlement into place, in improving the mental health system. But what more do you want, Commissioner Tumpas, some of these other actors, these other partners in the community to do to make this better? Again, as we pointed out before, there's other folks involved besides you.
In order to make this happen, both on the 10-year plan as well as in the DOJ settlement, once you secure the funding, it is going to require a community in order to do that. It is not just the Department of Health and Human Services doing everything. The nature of it is going to be out into the community, so it's going to require the collaboration and support of the community mental health centers, of the hospitals, of others out in the community, other providers and so forth that are out there.
Let's get some response from our listeners. Commissioner Tumpas, again, the number here in the exchange, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Post a comment on Facebook. It's NHPR Exchange, all one word. And Jane's waiting in Franconia. Hi, Jane. Thanks for calling in. You're on the air.
Hi, yes. I've worked in the community mental health center system for 35 years. So during that time, I've seen constant erosion of rates, constant erosion of basic infrastructure. So my comment was that I wanted to thank Commissioner Tumpas for noting that the real problem is not hospital beds, as important as that feels, when you're in the crisis. The problem is that we have allowed basic ability of the community mental health system to provide services to people who need them. And I'm worried that with the changes that we're talking about here, ACT teams, increased beds in the community, that again is important, but it's focused on the end of the line. And I would really like to hear Commissioner Tumpas comment on the fact that mental health centers have faced constant erosion and are now looking at managed Medicaid, which also is threatening, our ability to just maintain good staff, pay good salaries, and continue to be viable.
Okay, great point, Jane. Thank you very much. And I wanted to talk to you about managed Medicaid anyway, and she's folding that into her broader concerns about the community mental health centers. Thanks again, Jane. Go ahead, Commissioner Tumpas.
Jane raises a couple of points. One is that, and really this is where the tie-in to managed care comes in. I mentioned it earlier, and Jane, I think, mentioned it, that don't wait until the end of the line. You have to begin early on. And a key premise of the care management is to look at the whole individual and look at not just the behavioral health needs, but also look at the physical care needs and so forth, because the two go – you can't separate – in my mind, you can't separate them, along with the other supports that they need, supported employment, housing, and so forth. So we've got to look at the whole person and really try to go back upstream, if you will, to make sure that we're dealing with the individual up front. And that's really part of what we're trying to do with the care management program. I understand the issues that the mental health centers and others have raised regarding rates. I'm given the resources that I'm given the resources for, and we need to try to make that work. But again, the whole idea of the care management program is not to just ratchet down on rates for people and make them work harder because people are already working very hard.
That's the fear, though, that these private companies have a profit motive and they will cut so that they can make profit at the expense of care.
We have specific stipulations in our contract that focus on quality, that focus on outcomes, that focus on client satisfaction, that focus on provider satisfaction, and so forth. We provide a level of oversight on that to make sure that that doesn't happen. That's precisely what we don't want to happen. But as part of this, there is a change because we need to take a look at implementation of services and capabilities that avoid the higher costs so that the biggest, whether it's in physical health or whether it's in behavioral health, these transitions where you're going from one environment to another, the admissions and readmissions into whether it's the New Hampshire hospital or whether it's the emergency department of a local hospital are pretty darn expensive. And if we do things right up front in terms of looking at the care of the individual and so forth, that's what we are tasking the care management organizations, the MCOs, in order to do. That, yes, there is an element of profit there, but again, I know what's in there. It's not a whole lot of money. Plus, we're holding people. We have them at risk for quality indicators as well as we have them at risk for the payment reform and several other measures that we have so that and they cannot just ratchet down on services because they need to make money. That's not what this is about. We have our oversight that we'll be providing to make sure that that does not happen.
And the MCOs are the managed care organizations,
the three in the state of New Hampshire, Healthy Families, the Meridian organization, and WellSense.
Well, and in the private insurance market, there's this concept I'm sure you're familiar with, Commissioner Tumpas, patient-centered care, you know, the idea that when you put the patient more in charge of his or her own care plan, they may actually save money instead of the doctor saying you need to do X, Y, and Z, Laura. Is that concept of patient-centered care being worked into this new world of managed Medicaid here in New Hampshire?
Absolutely. That is the foundation for what it is that we are doing. It's called the patient-centered medical home. And it really is – we have – our health system is really a complex system. And so what we're looking to do is to basically make sure that we're focused on the overall health of the individual by managing the care across different providers and silos, if you will, in a more efficient and effective way.
Again, our number here in the exchange for you to join our conversation with Nick Tumpas, Commissioner for New Hampshire's Health and Human Services Department, is 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Post a comment on Facebook, NHPR Exchange, all one word. One more time, that number, 1-800-892-6477. And Commissioner Tumpas, let's go to Manchester next, where Audrey is waiting. Hi, Audrey, you're on the air. Thanks for joining us.
Hello. I'm a big fan of your show. I listen very, very often. I'm actually calling because I happen to be a recipient of Medicaid, and I have been for years. There's quite a number of issues if you were to listen to people who actually have experienced what it's like to, whether it's being in mental health or going to a hospital. I was at the emergency room last night, and I will tell you, I've had private insurance before, and the level of care that a Medicaid recipient gets is not the same level that a person who has private insurance or HMO gets. Now, I know that there's many issues with Medicaid, but my issue is that when you talk about managed care, what you're really, you know, you're basically just giving it some fancy label, trying to, you know, make a goal of something that's really beyond your control, because there's such a stigma of, you know, when a doctor sees a person who has Medicaid and they come in, they've already got their mind made up.
What do they have their mind made up about, Audrey? This is real interesting. Yeah, what do you feel in terms of a stigma?
Well, you know, I've been told, well, other than the stigma of, oh, this person is low income, you know, maybe this person's on drugs, maybe this person is, you know, mentally ill, you know, we really just kind of get rushed out the door. Mm. And, you know, another issue is that doctors are really only getting 60% of what they would get for taking care of a patient who's on Medicaid versus a private insurance. And I've been told by Department of Health and Human Services that that's not correct, yet I've been told literally by that same Department of Health and Human Services that they don't want to pay for the care that I need for my health issues. So instead of going to a normal pain management clinic, they send me to the methadone clinic where I stand in line with you know, drug addicts every single day.
Wow. Audrey, thank you for calling in. It's good to hear from someone who's got that direct experience with Medicaid and feeling kind of stigmatized, Commissioner Tumpas, that, you know, people look at that card and they, well, they sort of downgrade what they feel they want to do for Audrey. That's how she feels anyway.
I have to acknowledge that if that's what she perceives, that is what she perceives. But my conversations with doctors and others is that they're focused on their work. They're not looking at how it's getting paid and so forth. When somebody walks into an emergency room of a hospital, they're dealing with a crisis at the moment. They're professionals. That's what they're looking to do. They're not looking at whether or not somebody is paying. The doctors, for the most part, wouldn't be able to tell you how much they're being paid because they don't deal with that part of it. It is a factor for administrators and so forth, but for the frontline professional nurse, doctor, and others, they're focused on on dealing with the issues at hand with the individual.
Audrey, thank you for your call. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Facebook is NHPR Exchange, all one word. And while we're talking about Medicaid, another question for you, Commissioner Tumpas. As you well know, the state of New Hampshire has been in a huge debate for a year now as to whether it should join those states who have decided to expand Medicaid under the Affordable Care Act or join those states that have decided not to expand Medicaid. What are your thoughts on this debate overall, Commissioner Tumpas, that really dominated the legislature last year?
It was an extraordinary summer with the commission that was set up. Myself and a number of others, I was not a voting member, but I sat through better than 60 hours of discussion and debate and
so
forth.
That's that special commission that met on expansion after the legislature couldn't reach agreement.
Yes. And so there's been a number of things that have evolved. And, you know, what I perceive is that there is, I think, broad agreement on the part of a number of people, both in the House, the Senate, and the governor's office, of the need to expand coverage for health access. How we go about doing that is really the question. What was originally envisioned out of the Affordable Care Act, where anybody up to a certain level of income would go automatically into a Medicaid expansion, we are far away from that right now. The legislature is looking at other measures that would involve some of that, that would involve a program where somebody who has employer-sponsored insurance, that they would stay in that employer-sponsored insurance so long as the cost of that, along with the other benefits that needed to be provided under the Affordable Care Act, is less to keep them in that program than going on to the Medicaid program, the expanded Medicaid program. There's also a discussion regarding a premium assistance to move it to a different model, more of a private insurance type of a model. again, those are the things that are being discussed at the legislature. I'm aware of a number of the things. I can't really get into the details other than the fact that the department, myself and others in the department, are supporting the governor, the House, and the Senate as they go through their deliberations. And then how that's going to evolve, I don't know. But I'm hopeful that we'll give the opportunity for up to 50,000, which is what we estimate of people who would be able to take advantage of that type of a program.
So leave it up to the legislature, the elected political leaders, how to do it. But you do hope that they do it, that New Hampshire joins the yes column and not the no column.
I very much absolutely believe that that we need to do something for these people because of the unintended consequences of not dealing with these just contribute to the very issues that we were talking about earlier regarding mental health, the very issues that we were talking about in terms of emergency room use, the issues of uncompensated care that are pervasive in the hospital system as well as in the mental health system as well as in the community health system. So the more people you have insured, whatever vehicle is used in order to do that, now you bring that uncompensated care number down and allows us to basically get a more rational system moving forward. So I absolutely believe that it is the right thing to do. I have a sense that a number of other people also believe that. It's just a matter of finding the right set of vehicles and policy decisions in terms of doing that.
If New Hampshire did take this step, Commissioner Tumpas, to expand Medicaid to 50,000 people, it's a lot of people, do we have the capacity to then offer services to those folks? Do we have enough therapists at mental health centers? Do we have enough nurses at, you know, community health centers? Are there enough health providers to take care of that many more people?
Well, first off, the 50,000 is over. It would happen over a certain period of time. So it would not be open the doors and you'll have 50,000 people, number one. Number two is many of these people are already receiving care, but they're receiving care in inappropriate settings, for example, in the emergency room of a hospital. But as a broad statement, there is a capacity issue. I know it's been discussed on this program in the past. And frankly, it's a nice challenge to have that now what we're looking at is enhancing the capacity in order to basically deal with the demand where there's people going to get paid for the services that are being provided.
More conversation with Nick Tumpas coming up. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
This is New Hampshire Public Radio. Good morning. It's 9:39.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, access to abortion on the 41st anniversary of Roe v. Wade. Then for this month's readers' review, The Grapes of Wrath by John Steinbeck. All coming up on the Diane Rehm Show.
The Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 till noon on NHPR. Support for NHPR comes from you, our members, and support also comes to us from Enfield Shaker Museum, hosting their annual Snowshoe Fest. Snowshoeing on the Shaker Trails, dog sledding, outdoor games, field sledding, sleigh rides, and more this Saturday, shakersmuseum.org. And the Clean Bedroom Organic Mattress and Bedding Showroom in Kittery, Maine, everything made from organic and sustainable materials, also on the web at thecleanbedroom.com. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow in The Exchange, another look at New Hampshire's death penalty debate and whether the legislature will repeal capital punishment this year or not. Today in The Exchange, we're sitting down with Commissioner Nick Tumpas to discuss the year ahead for New Hampshire's Department of Health and Human Services. You can join us with your questions and comments for the commissioner at 1-800-892-6477. Email us, exchange@nhpr.org. Post a comment on our Facebook page. It's NHPR Exchange. It's all one word. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. And Commissioner Tumpas, I want to ask you about a bill that was signed into law last year. This was a big deal, legalizing the use of medical marijuana. New Hampshire becoming one of almost 20 states, I think, at this point that does this. What's the task in front of you this year, Commissioner Tumpas, to get this new system up and running?
The law you're referring to was known as House Bill 573, which is the use of cannabis for therapeutic purposes. That's the formal name. There are a couple of significant milestones that have to be achieved. The first is a commission was set up to oversee this. We the department, set up a team. When I looked at the law, basically, it's putting us in a whole new business. And we looked at it and say we have to develop a business plan and flow it out and so forth. And we went to the commission to do it. The couple of key milestones that we're aimed at right now, one is both of them involve the development of rules. The first part of it, rules, these are rules that dictate how we go about doing things that have to be passed by a body within the legislature. The first milestone is in July of this year, concurrent with the enactment, July 23rd, 2014, we're required to adopt rules that will dictate how cards are issued to the clients as well as their caregivers that basically authorize them to say, I'm authorized to basically use the marijuana for medicinal purposes. That's part one. Then the second part is in January of 2015, so 6 months following that, we are required to adopt the rules for the licensing and certification of 4 geographically located alternative treatment centers where people can go and secure the marijuana for the purposes for which it was intended. So that's just to get the rules in place, and then there's going to be additional work that would need to be developed in order to do requests for proposals in order to get the things up in operation.
Sounds like it's going to be a while then.
It is going to take some time, and therein lies a part of the challenge. This had remarkable bipartisan support because I believe that it was a very personal issue for many people when they see their loved ones, family members or others that were dealing with some of the glaucoma or some of the other type of issues that people have. So it is a significant amount of work that needs to be done. We are actively working that. We were required working in conjunction with the legislature to do the first annual report, which was just released last week, that we were required to do something at the end of December, beginning of January, and we released that last week, documenting what has been done to date. But our team is working very closely with that commission that has a broad representation in order to do the rules, A, for the cards and the issuance of those cards, and then B, for the alternative treatment centers.
Well, just give us a sense of some of the issues involved with that step one, July 2014. Okay, adopting rules for patients and providers around who can and who can't get these cards. I mean, you know, how do you even begin to work your way through that? Let's say somebody has a condition who they feel they really do need this, and then the provider says, nah, I don't think you do, and then they challenge that decision, and then do they start doctor shopping? I mean, what are some of the issues involved in that?
I have in front of me that you can't see on the radio, but one of the things that we did was we took the elements of the law and we put together a flow diagram to show all the major components regarding the eligibility, the registration, the treatment, the review and the reporting, any of the – so if there is somebody that says, this is what I feel, now what are their rights in terms of appealing that and so forth. So all that is being looked at this point. I don't have the details, but what we did was we laid it out in terms of a flow diagram to really bring focus to where do we need to have the rules in place to dictate so that this happens with a degree of integrity. And that's really one of the key things here is to make sure that people who get those cards are legitimately have the capability to basically utilize the drug and that the alternative treatment centers are providing a controlled environment and that there's the utmost integrity in terms of the process so that this doesn't lead to, again,
the use by those who don't really need it. That was Governor Hassan's concern.
Well, it's a concern that I share as well in terms of the homegrown and so forth. So there's a number of issues that will get raised on this over the next couple of months as we work through the rules process. We'll be working with that advisory committee and so forth in terms of bringing these things forward so that when we go in July in order to get the approval of the rules, that things will have been completely vetted before they get there.
The number for you to join our conversation with Nick Tumpas, Commissioner for New Hampshire's Health and Human Services Department, is 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email if you'd like, exchange@nhpr.org. Post a comment on Facebook. It's NHPR Exchange, all one word. While we're talking about marijuana, your department just recently, Commissioner Tumpas, released a study on teenage marijuana use, showing New Hampshire has among the highest rates of use in the nation. Now, teens have used marijuana for a long time, but it is significant that we have almost the highest rate of that use. What do you make of that?
Well, I have not seen the release of that, Laura. It's called the Behavioral Risk Factors Surveillance. BRFIS is the acronym for it. And I've not seen the details of it, but I'm aware of that. The key question that I have to ask when I see that, whether it's that or the use of alcohol inappropriately on the part of minors and so forth, is why? You know, we need to get to some of the – it's one thing to say that it's happening, but we need to go back upstream, if you will, to say is it education? Is it there's some underlying issue that child and so forth is dealing with that is not being addressed, that now they turn to this? Is it peer pressure? What are the factors there? I don't have an answer, but looking
at
the data –
compared to other states, well, again,
why
again, here?
I don't know that. I honestly don't know why that would be the case until I actually see the data and see if it tells us anything.
Is there a connection, do you think, Commissioner Tumpas, between medical marijuana in almost half the states, not quite, talk about legalization in other states, including here in New Hampshire, and these high rates of teen marijuana use here in New Hampshire? Is there a connection between those three figures or those three events?
It would not surprise – I don't know for sure, but it would not surprise me if there was.
All right. Again, our number, 1-800-892-6477. The email is exchange@nhpr.org. Here's an email that came in earlier from Ken. He says, how is DHHS dealing with workforce development issues with all these budget cuts? How many vacancies are there right now? There have been several key leadership positions which have become vacant in recent months, some due to retirement. How high are caseloads/workload demands? I know you've got, at least 100 positions open, Commissioner Tumpas, probably more. Ken, thanks for the email.
The department has, from the beginning of the last biennium, we have lost 425 positions. They've been abolished. And we're holding over 300 positions vacant right now to deal with back-of-the-budget reductions and so forth. Our caseloads were at historically high levels. They have leveled off and are starting to come down a little bit, but not significantly.
And caseloads means this foster care worker has X number of kids he or she is watching, for example.
The number on Medicaid, the number on food stamps, the number on aid to the permanently and totally disabled caseloads, as well as, and those are some of the major programs as opposed to the number of kids in child care and so forth. So, but this really leads to one of the things that we've initiated within the department is to do a redesign of the organization, recognizing that we've lost a number of the positions and so forth. And then with care management as well as a number of these other number of other initiatives, that creates opportunities for us to take a look at a way in which to basically make the organization and evolve the organization so that we're capable of dealing with these challenges moving forward. I mentioned at the beginning of the program, I'm proud of the work that the people had done. But it's going to require us to work more effectively as a team. We need to work cross boundaries, both within organization and outside of the organization. We need to streamline how we're going about doing things. So we're looking at all that. The issue that Ken points out in terms of the challenges, we are recruiting for those positions.
Do you have money to hire those folks?
Oh, yeah. Again, I've got an ongoing operation that I have to operate, and so there are. We make a conscious decision in terms of the areas that we're not going to hire, and we make conscious decisions on the areas that we are going to hire. And having the leadership positions, what Ken is referring to in the area of behavioral health and our developmental services, we had two people leave those positions along with another senior executive we had within the department for different reasons, that two retirement and one moving on to another opportunity, but we are actively trying to recruit for those positions right now.
Okay. Well, Ken, thanks for the email. Let's take a call if we could, Commissioner Tumpas. And this is Nicholas waiting in Dover. Hi, Nicholas. You're on the exchange with Commissioner Tumpas. Go ahead.
Hi. I just wanted to make a simple point. You were just inquiring a moment ago about the reason for the sort of prevalence of marijuana use amongst teens in the state. And I feel like nobody wants to say it, but I think one reason for that is that it's fun. That's really the only, I feel like everybody sort of wants to they want to find some deeper meaning in it, but nobody ever mentions that it's just a fun thing to do.
Sure,
and that's why people are doing it.
And Nicholas, as I said, teens have always done this around the country. I'm just wondering, and I wonder what you think, Nicholas, why here in New Hampshire we have such higher rates of usage than elsewhere?
Oh, I don't know if I have anything.
All right.
I don't have anything to say to that, but I don't know. It just seems like a simple point that it's fun to do.
Sure. Okay. Thanks for the call, Nicholas. I mean, he's right. Teens have always done this. They think it's fun. It's a good way to party and so forth.
I have a problem calling it fun because it does impact when somebody gets in a car and then goes out. And you look at the number of incidents where either drugs or alcohol are involved in a car crash, where kids not wearing seatbelts. I mean, it just pains me where I see young lives that are lost because of either drug, alcohol, speed, not wearing a seatbelt, and so forth. So, that fun again.
But he's right. Teens do think it's fun. So what do you do with that reality?
I was a teen as well. but the fact of the matter is that there are. There are consequences, and we as a society are paying for that. And so those are the things that we need to look at and say, are there other things that could be more fun to do as opposed to taking some type of at the heart, it's tobacco that's going into your system.
All right. Well, Nicholas, thank you for the call. And I did want to ask you one last question related to a program we did last week, Commissioner Tumpas, that got a lot of attention. That was a panel of folks we had in here talking about post-traumatic stress disorder and traumatic brain injury among New Hampshire's veterans. A new effort kicked off just last week, paying more attention to the struggles of these returning veterans with these two difficulties, PTSD and TBI. What's your department's role in this big, new, rather exciting effort to help New Hampshire veterans cope with this?
In my mind, it's an extension of a commitment that the department made several years ago to focus on the needs of the veteran community within the state, which is one of the highest percentage of New Hampshire ranks close to the top in terms of the percentage of the population that are veterans. Back several years ago, the department made a commitment to fund a position that was really focused on not creating additional infrastructure, but creating linkages to all these different areas within the community that deal with veterans. That the commission that you referred to produced their report last week. It wasn't the beginning of the effort. It was producing the report now for action for us to take a look at. But the area that was remarkable about that is it just underscores the type of partnership and relationship that the department has with the National Guard, as well as a number of other areas. And both the General Riddell and myself spoke to the commission members at the State House last week. And one of the most significant yet simple things that they've done in terms of working with this issue and working with veterans is getting providers and others to just ask the simple question, have you served? Deceptively simple question, but opening up a whole avenue of additional opportunities to engage that individual, because in many times they want to speak with somebody else who has served themselves. So it just shows the type of things that we can do by working collaboratively. Again, we're the only department across the country that has a focus on this, and we have a remarkable partnership with the National Guard and with other organizations without creating a whole bunch of infrastructure, just creating the linkages to a number of other areas.
And the only state with a point person in your department to coordinate all this and oversee.
That's correct, within a Department of Health and Human Services that I'm aware of.
I'll close, Commissioner Tumpas, by letting everybody know that last week was your sixth official year as Commissioner at the Department of Health and Human Services. So happy birthday, I guess, would be the appropriate thing to say. Thank you very much for being here.
Thank you.
That's Nick Tumpas, Commissioner for New Hampshire's Health and Human Services Department. The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our producers are Ellen Grimm and Faith Mikesell. Our volunteer is Alan Cohen. Our intern is James Pouliot. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. The executive producer is Keith Shields. And I'm Laura Kanoy.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you missed any part of today's program, listen to The Exchange anytime at nhpr.org.
I'm Laura Kanoy, and tomorrow on The Exchange, another chapter in the death penalty debate. The legislature is again considering repeal of capital punishment. Supporters say their cause has gained momentum for several reasons, including Governor Hassan's likely backing. But some argue that the death penalty still plays an important role in the state's justice system and that its limited application proves its fairness. Send us your thoughts by email, Facebook, and join us for The Exchange tomorrow morning live at 9 and again at 8 p.m. on NHPR.
New Hampshire Public Radio with the Diane Rehm Show next at 10 o'clock. Support for NHPR comes from UR members and Comcast Business, partnering with businesses of any size to provide scalable technology solutions that keep pace with growth and success. More at business.comcast.com. And Capital Center for the Arts in Concord presenting Nureyev State Ballet Theater, performing Sleeping Beauty, Tuesday, February 4th at 7. Tickets at ccanh.com.
These are the stations of New Hampshire Public Radio.
WEVO Concord 89.1.
WEVS Nashua 88.3.
WEVH Hanover 91.3.
WEVN Keene 90.7.
WEVC Gorham 107.1.
WEVJ Jackson 99.5.
WEVF Colebrook 90.3.
And WEVQ Littleton 91.9.
And online at nhpr.org.
It is 10 o'clock.
From WAMU and NPR in Washington, I'm Diane Rehm. On this day, 41 years ago, the Supreme Court ruled women have a constitutional right to abortion. Today, thousands of abortion opponents hold their annual rally in front of the court to protest that decision. Roe v. Wade is still